It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. It is the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast. In my humble opinion, the best fantasy football podcast in the world, primarily because of this other guy, Evan Silva of RotoWorld.com. The more people I talk to, the more respect I realize everybody in the industry has for Evan, and rightfully so. I've had other people in the industry say, you know, he's kind of the guy that you look to and you know that what he says carries a lot of weight. And we got him every week here on the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast. Check him out on Twitter, at Evan Silva. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL. By the way, next week's show, you're going to learn a little bit more about a guy that I think is number one in the country. I know some other guys that maybe have bigger names. I'm just telling you, Evan is better at the job than they are, period. I don't know how they got those jobs, but probably just someday they got them. Guess what? Evan's better. And you'll find out more about his process, how he goes about the week on next week's show. We are presented by Saks Underwear. It's getting hot. Evan and I are big guys. Go to SaksUnderwear.com/Tucker so that your underwear doesn't ride up. It doesn't stick. There's a better way, fellas. It's SaksUnderwear.com/Tucker. And most of you that listen to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast know it's Omaha Steaks time. And on the Fantasy Feast Podcast, we have to mention that there is a ridiculous amount of food you can get for $49 at Omaha Steaks. Just put Ross in the search bar. Ridiculous. Greatest Father's Day gift ever. Speaking of gifts, Evan, we've got two more contestants for the July High Stakes MyFFPC.com League. Remember, those are $35 entries. That's a pretty nice payout for whoever ends up winning. And all you need to do is take advantage of any of the sponsors like Saks or Omaha for Father's Day and forward me the combination Ross at RossTucker.com. Pretty easy. This week's contestants, Gleb Gorkover, who sent me a bunch of Amazon purchases. Thank you, Gleb. Come on down. And Barry Sato from Hawaii, who sent me like 12. I mean, every sponsor we have, pretty much, Barry took advantage of. So congrats, Barry. You're in. You take advantage of every sponsor we have over at RossTucker.com. You are in. Speaking of in, it's the second part of our two-part series on Evan's fantasy breakouts to find out exactly who is in or not in terms of guys he thinks have a great opportunity to maybe break out this season. But I feel like before we even get to that, Evan, I got to get your thoughts on the news of the day the last couple days since we last did the show last Wednesday. I guess we'll work, you know, in chronological order. Jeremy Maclin getting released Friday night by the Chiefs. As of right now, we know he's met with Buffalo. We're recording this Wednesday morning. We don't know where he'll sign or whatever. So tough to comment on that part of it, I guess, yet. Tell me what you're thinking, what you're telling people, Evan, your advice now as it relates to the Chiefs pass catchers.
Well, we are going to talk about Tyreek Hill in this segment of the breakout show. So we will get to him. It definitely helps Travis Kelce, though, as well. I mean, it solidifies those two guys as the top targets in the Chiefs passing game. Travis Kelce, so Jeremy Maclin missed four games last year. Travis Kelce went over 100 yards in three of those games. And then we are going to be looking at some of the younger receivers that they have. They're going with a super young receiver core. I believe everybody left in their receiver core is age 25 or younger. Tyreek Hill will be number one. And then it'll be a battle between Chris Conley, a big, super athletic guy who doesn't really fit the way that Alex Smith plays the game, but has always had potential. Albert Wilson, a smaller receiver who was super productive in college, another very athletic receiver who, the Chiefs just really have not made a commitment to making him a big part of their offense. And then DeMarcus Robinson is a player that last year the Chiefs drafted in the fourth round, and Andy Reid recently spoke about DeMarcus Robinson as a player who had stepped up at OTAs, and a player like that stepping up and showing the coaching staff that they can trust him and count on him may have been one of the reasons that they were a little bit more comfortable releasing Jeremy Maclin, which I think really was a cap move. They're in really bad cap condition, and they're going to have to make another big move after this season, which, ideally for them, it would be Patrick Mahomes coming along and establishing himself as a franchise quarterback so that they can move on from Alex Smith's big salary. But Jeremy Maclin he was the guy that had to go, and I don't think they're going to be making any big additions to replace him.
Is it even worth talking about Maclin, Evan, before he signs somewhere?
I think that he can still play. He was banged up a lot last year. Had a groin injury, a concussion, has battled an ankle in recent years. I think he can still play, though. He was very good in 2015. He was much less effective last year. I think that a lot of it can be attributed to Alex Smith, though. Alex Smith had one of the, and we talked about this during the season, Alex Smith had one of, I think it was his worst season in Kansas City last year. And I don't think that helped Jeremy Maclin.
Let's get to Eric Decker as well. He has not moved on yet as of now, but he will be. He will either be traded or be released. I saw on your Twitter handle, at Evan Silva. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL, by the way, and the podcast company is at RTF Podcast, our producer, Brian. Eric Decker's not going to be a Jet. So, again, we don't know where he's going to land, but I want to get your thoughts on Decker as well as what it does for the New York Jets.
So, throughout his career, these guys are about the same age, too, Jeremy Maclin and Eric Decker. Eric Decker's just a little bit older. But throughout his career, he has been more durable than Jeremy Maclin. I realize that at this moment in time, Eric Decker is coming off of a couple of surgeries, one on his hip and one on his shoulder, but he's already received full medical clearance. He has practiced fully at OTAs. There was even a day where he was not even practicing in a non-contact jersey. He should be all systems go, and that's a really good sign. We are still 3 months away from week one. So he recovered very, very nicely, and I would feel pretty good about his health. He's a guy who in NFL 10s I'm very willing to draft, even though I do not know what team he's going to play for right now. Him moving on from the Jets. See, the Jets are very clearly just giving up on the season. We kind of knew that early on, but a move like this made in June really, really confirms it, because they don't need salary cap space. They're going to go run out a bunch of youngsters. Our Darius Stewart becomes a lot more interesting now. I think that he will play inside a lot. Quincy Enunwa right now is their de facto number one receiver. He should be heavily targeted this season. Those targets are probably not going to be quality targets from Josh McCown and Christian Hackenberg, but he should be on the field a lot and getting opportunities to make plays. And then Robbie Anderson will be their primary perimeter receiver, I expect. Robbie Anderson, though, did get arrested during the offseason and at some point could face a suspension. I mean, their team is a mess, but there I think will be some opportunities for fantasy value, just because they're going to be really, really bad, and there are going to be a lot of targets in this offense.
All right, finally, Mike Williams. I wanted to comment on this, Evan, because, you know, I've had a herniated disc, I've had back surgery, I've had back issues. You know, he's not participating, hasn't participated in any of the OTAs, and they're shutting him down for the rest of the offseason program with what the Chargers are calling a mild disc herniation, to which I would say it's enough of a herniation that it's bothering him, causing him discomfort, and he's not able to practice. If it were really mild, he wouldn't even notice it. If it's to the point where he can't practice and it's bothering him, then it's really not that mild. And in my experience, Evan, the only guy I know of that had a mild, like, you know, had a herniation and was able to resolve it through rehab was Todd Collins. I only know that because evidently that was the deal in Buffalo, and the Bills trainers told me about it, and the hope was that maybe I could rehab it to the point where I could avoid the surgery. But that's pretty darn rare, and I wonder how much of that's because Todd Collins was a quarterback and not having to, you know, play offensive line like I did. I hope I'm wrong, but I smell trouble for Mike Williams. I don't really feel good about this. And my guess is at some point, maybe sooner rather than later, they're going to have to repair that with a discectomy, but we'll see. Oof.
Yeah, that does not sound good. And he's also a player who needed all this time because he's competing for snaps in a very crowded receiver core. I mean, they've got Keenan Allen coming back. They've got Tyrell Williams, who went over 1,000 yards as a second-year undrafted player out of Western Oregon. They've got Hunter Henry and Antonio Gates at tight end. They've got Dontrell Inman. Travis Benjamin is coming back after a disappointing season. So, you know, this dude is in a competition for snaps, and you can't compete for snaps and win playing time when you're on the bench. It's not a good situation for Mike Williams. It really solidifies for me Tyrell Williams, that he is going to have a big part in the offense. And he's a guy whose ADP has been dipping ever since the Chargers used the 7th overall pick on Mike Williams. I mean, they're going to have to lean on Tyrell Williams again this year, and I think he's a really good value right now where you can get him in drafts.
Let's get into your fantasy breakouts. Last week, we did the second half of them. Today, we'll do the first half. And the first guy that was on your list, Evan, was Packers running back Ty Montgomery.
Yeah, so Ty Montgomery last season converted from wide receiver to running back in week 6. From that point on, he was the PPR RB16. He was the number 16 overall scorer at running back in PPR leagues. And that's really where you want to target him. I went back and watched his carries. I thought he was better than I expected as an interior runner, number one. And the Packers are looking for a back that they can use in that, like, side saddle next in the shotgun position next to Aaron Rodgers. They used Randall Cobb there historically. They even tried using Davante Adams a little bit there last season. They would even use John Kuhn back there in that position. And last year, they would even use Aaron Ripkowski in that position. And Ty Montgomery really has the perfect skill set to fill this position. And, I mean, one of the concerns for Ty Montgomery is that, there are two concerns. Number one is that he was not a good pass protector as a rookie. and that would cost him playing time. I mean, he would get yanked out of the game at times because he didn't consistently pass protect for Aaron Rodgers. Now, if you think back in the fact that he had to change positions on the fly and learn all those things on the fly, I think it's understandable and maybe a little bit forgivable. The other concern with Ty Montgomery is that the Packers used three draft picks on running backs. They took Jamal Williams out of BYU in the fourth round, and they took Aaron Jones out of TCU in the fifth round, and they took Devontae Mays out of, I believe, Southern Utah or Utah State in the seventh round. Not a player that I'm overly familiar with. I know he's 230 pounds. I just don't really know a whole lot about him. I know a lot about the other guys. Aaron Jones, I thought, was the best of the bunch. A lot of people do like Jamal Williams, and the Packers obviously like him because they took him ahead of Aaron Jones. He was a really – I watched a bunch of him. He was a good pass-protecting back, but he's not a very good athlete, and I thought that it showed up when you watch him. He's just a step slow, and that will become a greater problem for him probably at the NFL level than it was in the – the Pac-12 or wherever he was playing at BYU. So I'm not really too worried about the competition, and I really think it's going to be just up to Ty Montgomery. Can he pass protect? If he can, I think he will earn a very, very valuable role in one of the NFL's best offenses where he can have games where he racks up a lot of catches playing that position next to Aaron Rodgers in the shotgun.
The next guy on your list, Evan, you had was a wide receiver, Jamison Crowder from the Redskins, one of the last guys that Cousins is really familiar with Garcon and DeSean Jackson gone.
Yeah, DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garcon finished 1-2 on the team in targets last year. Jamison Crowder came in third on the team, and he is returning with the most familiarity with Kirk Cousins. And I put a lot of stock in that familiarity from a quarterback to a wide receiver. You know, I think that means a lot, even at the smallest, youngest stages of football, at the peewee level, on to high school, on to college, and into the pros. And, whether it is Tom Brady and Julian Edelman or Ryan Tannehill and Jarvis Landry, it's quarterbacks have receivers that they trust. And I think that Jamison Crowder is that type of receiver. And I think it shows up a little bit in Jamison Crowder's red zone usage last year. Even with Pierre Garcon and DeSean Jackson in the fold, Crowder led the Redskins in red zone targets, red zone catches, red zone touchdowns, and in passer rating on targets from Kirk Cousins. So there's a lot of opportunity in this Washington passing game. They're missing 224 total targets from last season. Lot of room for Jamison Crowder to continue to ascend. I do like Terrell Pryor as a big upside guy and a guy who I think could score a lot of touchdowns this season. But Jamison Crowder, I think, has the highest floor and might have a chance to catch 100 passes this year and really establish himself as someone that people talk about when they talk about one of the best slot receivers in football.
Keeping it moving here with your top 10 fantasy breakout players, we've got another running back, Browns running back Isaiah Crowell.
Yeah, and the Browns made some big offensive line upgrades this offseason. They went out and they signed Kevin Zeitler. They signed J.C. Treader, the big center from the Packers, and they gave a big extension to their left guard, Joel Bitonio, and they kept Joe Thomas. So really the only question mark they have right now on the offensive line is right tackle, and they have a couple of candidates there competing. But I think the offensive line has a chance to be very, very good this year in Cleveland. Duke Johnson is perceived as being the receiving back for the Browns. However, Isaiah Crowell, his passing game usage took a pretty big leap last season. And in the second half of the year, Isaiah Crowell actually out-targeted Duke Johnson 34-27 in the final eight games. Isaiah Crowell has been hyper efficient. I mean, he's a good player. He has averaged 8.5 yards per reception for his career. That's very strong for a running back. Last year, he averaged a career best 4.81 yards per carry. And that was with, you know, behind an offensive line that is not going to, that was not as good as this one is going to be. He's a contract year player. He's currently playing on a restricted free agent tender. The Browns' only mildly notable running back addition in the offseason was seventh round pick Matt Days, a guy who will be competing for a roster spot. And, you know, there's been a lot of coach speak around Isaiah Crowell, but I'm buying it with Isaiah Crowell. He's been talked up incessantly by Hugh Jackson, who has said publicly that he kicked himself for not running the ball more. I think that they're going to be intent on running the ball. I don't know that they're going to be in tank mode anymore this year. I don't think they're going to necessarily tank a second season in a row. I think they're going to try to be competitive this year, and their best avenue to do that is going to be with the running game.
Totally agree. I mean, you know, some of the moves – I'll give you another team, by the way. The Niners signing Elvis Dumervil. I mean, if that's not an example that they're trying to change the culture and, you know, win some games early to get these guys to all buy in and try to get some momentum, I don't know what is when you're a team like the 49ers signing a guy like Elvis Dumervil. What about the next wide receiver? You got a couple wide receivers coming up. Willie Snead for the Saints.
Last two seasons in PPR leagues, Willie Snead has finished as the wide receiver 32 and the wide receiver 30. And this year he is being drafted as the wide receiver 32, which means that he is being drafted at his floor. And I think he has a lot of room for growth this year. The Saints traded Brandon Cooks, of course. They are missing almost 150 targets from last season. And, you know, this is now Willie Snead is like established as the number two receiver in New Orleans. Willie Snead, the last 2 years when he was finishing as the wide receiver 32 and wide receiver 30, hovered around 100 targets. And I think he can get into that 120, 130 target range. And that could give him a significant boost in terms of receptions, yards, touchdowns. And so that's why I think that he is still a leap candidate, even though like he's been a solid fantasy receiver the last couple of years. But I think that he can morph in this year into a little bit more. Pro Football Focus is Scott Barrett does a strength of schedule expectation for all the wide receivers in the league. And, I mean, you know, it's strength of schedule. It's not going to be dead on accurate. A lot of the stuff that we're doing right now is not going to be dead on accurate. But I think it is helpful. And, you know, when there's someone that really stands out, like Willie Snead in Scott Barrett's strength of schedule expectation, I think it's notable. Willie Snead has the third easiest strength of schedule expectation among all NFL receivers this year. You know, people are really excited about Mike Thomas, and I mean, I totally get why. I've drafted him myself in some MFL 10s, but he's going to face much tougher opposition this year than he did last year with Brandon Cooks playing on the other side. I mean, teams are going to be more worried this year about Michael. Defenses are going to be more worried about Michael Thomas than they were last season. So his schedule is going to get more difficult, and Willie Snead's is going to get easier. So I really, really like Willie Snead right now as a sixth-round pick, and I will be willing to take him in the fifth round as well. He's someone that I want on my team this year.
This is the one I was probably most interested to hear you talk about because it just seems like opinions on him are all over the place, and that is Dante Moncrief from the Colts.
Yeah, and he's a player who's perceived as being a disappointment. He actually had a really good season in 2015 at age 22, and he had over 60 catches, almost 800 yards, 6 touchdowns. And then last year, everybody was like, all right, he's a lock, and myself included. I was very much on Dante Moncrief. last year. But he had turf toe surgery in May. And then in week two, he fractured his scapula, which is like in your shoulder. And then he battled a hamstring injury, and then he re-injured the shoulder later in the season. So he had some bad luck from an injury standpoint. I mean, I don't, you know, my takeaway from all that is not that he is suddenly injury prone. He really has never had injuries, even going back to Ole Miss, beyond last year. Now he's in a contract year. He's a pretty good – see, I think that he's a good post-hype target because he disappointed a lot of people last year. His ADP has fallen from, like, when people were taking him in the third round last year, he's down to the sixth, sometimes the seventh round, and the situation really hasn't changed. His quarterback is still Andrew Luck in a high-scoring offense. You know, he's still a guy who's big and was really fast coming out of school, and he's still very young. And if he stays healthy, and I mean, even last year when he was, you know, when he was banged up, he was still a guy that we were looking at every week that he was healthy in DFS. He scored, he missed seven games, but he still scored seven touchdowns. And this year, like, I think he's a lock to go over 100 targets if he can stay relatively healthy this year. He saw 105 targets. When he was mostly healthy in 2015, and I think he should easily be able to get back to that this year. So he's just a guy who you can buy on the rebound for a little bit cheaper than last year, and his situation hasn't changed a lot.
What about Chiefs wide receiver Tyreek Hill? You mentioned him earlier. You said we'd talk about him. Let's do it.
So Tyreek Hill was used as a gadget player and a part-time player as a rookie. He never played more than 68% of the Chiefs' offensive snaps in a game. And, you know, the history of receivers or of these gadget-type players has not been great in the NFL. Everyone wanted Cordero Patterson to happen. He didn't happen. Same with Tavon Austin. You know, go down a little bit further, D'Anthony Thomas and Dre Archer, they never really became anything. Percy Harvin had a good run there, but you know he was not able to sustain that year over year. Last year, when Tyreek Hill's role was – when he became a factor in the offense in week seven, from that point on, he was the number seven overall receiver in fantasy. During Jeremy Maclin's four missed games in the second half of the season, and this was, this is obviously applicable now because Jeremy Maclin has been released. During those four games, Tyreek Hill's pace stats, if you extrapolated them to a 16-game season, 112 catches, 1,156 yards from scrimmage, and 12 touchdowns. In March, of course, several months before Jeremy Maclin was released, here's a quote from Andy Reid. Growing Tyreek in the offense will be important. He's a smart kid. He picked it up so fast as a rookie, and he was able to play at our level right away. You know, I think that Andy, and then Andy Reid, after they released Jeremy Maclin, stated that Tyreek Hill is going to play that Z receiver position that Jeremy Maclin played, that DeSean Jackson played for Andy Reid in Philadelphia. And, I mean, Tyreek Hill, look, because his role is going to grow, he's going to get the ball more and be more consistent this year than he was last season. And then because he has the ability to simply outrun everyone on the field, which we saw him do multiple times last year, that gives him big play and big week potential. So what we're looking at is a guy whose consistency is going to improve, and he can be a week winner for us. And that's pretty much precisely what we're looking at in fantasy.
Okay. How about another running back, and that's Titans running back Derrick Henry. The only point I'll mention here, Evan, is knowing Malarkey a little bit, I am just telling you, I doubt he's real happy about any of this off-season stuff. He's kind of an old school, you know, by the book guy, and I think that should be mentioned.
Yeah, yeah, I totally understand that, and I also think that he's an old school by the book guy in terms of how he's going to use a back, because I think they love DeMarco Murray, and I think it's going to take a severe injury for Derrick Henry to get on the field consistently. I mean, I think that this is DeMarco Murray's backfield. And I think where Derrick Henry is going in drafts, you know, like he's going in the sixth round. I mean, he's going the sixth round in NFL 10s on Fantasy Football Calculator. I mean, every ADP that I've looked at, he's going in the sixth round, and I think he's being way, way overdrafted. With that said, if the severe injury happens to DeMarco Murray, I think that Derrick Henry can capitalize. I mean, I think that he could be a true league winner, maybe a top five fantasy running back in the event that he started to get 18-plus touches per game. Last year, Derrick Henry was number four in Football Outsiders rushing DVOA among running backs with at least 100 attempts. He was number six in success rate. He was number seven out of 53 running backs in Pro Football Focus elusive rating. That was a knock on Derrick Henry coming out of Alabama, was that he wasn't elusive, yet he was one of the most elusive backs in football as a rookie. And then he was number three out of 62 running backs in Pro Football Focus's pass blocking efficiency. So I think that if Derrick Henry did get on the field and, you know, was used in, like, let's say DeMarco Murray suffers an injury that's going to keep him out 2 to 3 weeks or 3 to 4 weeks, you know, relatively short term. I think that Derrick Henry is good enough in all phases of the game that he would capitalize on that opportunity. And even when DeMarco Murray came back, Derrick Henry would be difficult for the Titans to just, you know, go back to eliminating from their offense. But that's the kind of break that Derrick Henry is going to need to catch, I think. And so I'm not willing to take him. I do think he's a breakout candidate, but he sort of needs to get, like, lucky. And he needs to catch a break. And I mean, that's really what it comes down to. There's no way I could take him at his ADP right now.
All right, let's get to a wide receiver that there's also been a lot of conversation on, and that's DeVante Parker, the former first-round pick for the Dolphins.
Yeah, so all the offseason stories this year have suggested that DeVante Parker has a new sense of commitment to the game. Now, sometimes this is just, you know, puff in the offseason, and we don't really know, you know, whether to take it seriously or, you know, the guy will just go back to his old bad habits. You know, I don't know when the players leave the facility for a while before training camp. And the targets and opportunity are still a concern for DeVante Parker in Miami. I mean, Kenny Stills is back at $8 million per year. Julius Thomas was added in the offseason, and he's another guy who's been getting a lot of puff pieces out of Miami. With that said, I mean, I have no doubts really about DeVante Parker's ability, and I believe that it is up to him to take that next step, that, you know, if he truly is bought in to, you know, not eating junk food anymore and not playing video games until like 3 o'clock in the morning and then being late for the meetings the next day, that he can emerge as potentially the Dolphins' number one receiver. I mean, he has that kind of ability. And I think that the Dolphins under Adam Gase want to become a team that runs the ball with volume and takes shots downfield. And Ryan Tannehill did take a step forward as a deep passer last year. He was number 10 in Pro Football Focus's deep ball rating on throws of 20-plus yards. His accuracy on downfield passes has improved. I don't think that, you know, the way that the Dolphins called their offense last year suggests to me that they don't want to be a team that is targeting Jarvis Landry 12, 13, 14, 15 times a game anymore. I think that they want to be a run-first team that takes shots downfield. And that's why they paid Kenny Stills, and that's potentially part of the reason that they're talking up Devontae Parker. And so I think that he offers some breakout potential this season.
Two more to go. Another running back that I think is really interesting that I want to hear what you have to say about, and that's Patriots running back Mike Gillisley with that jam-packed backfield.
Yeah, Mike Gillisley last year in Buffalo led the NFL in yards per carry at 5.7. Year before that, he averaged 5.7 yards per carry as well. So he's been very, very efficient in an increasingly large sample size. In New England, he's in line for the clock-killing short yardage role on the high-scoring Patriots. And we know how that worked out last year for LeGarrette Blount. I do not think that he's going to put up almost 300 carries and 18 touchdowns like LeGarrette Blount did. I think that Mike Gillisley probably will finish closer to half of what LeGarrette Blount put up. But the Patriots, you know, we think of them as a passing Tom Brady-centric team, but over the past six seasons, they've scored more rushing touchdowns than any team in the NFL. They've averaged 18 rushing touchdowns as a team over the last six seasons. Mike Gillisley was good enough in short yardage and goal line situations in Buffalo that the Bills would often pull LeSean McCoy and insert Mike Gillisley in situations where they were very close inside the five. The downside with Mike Gillisley is that he lacks passing game skills. He's only caught 15 passes through, four or five NFL seasons. And he only caught 23 passes in 4 years at the University of Florida. Last year, Pro Football Focus graded him as one of the worst pass protection running backs in the league. Now, those won't necessarily be his roles if he is going to fill these LeGarrette Blount duties. But I think it should be noted that Rex Burkhead can do all those things that I just mentioned, and he is bigger than Mike Gillisley. So I don't think that Mike Gillisley is a lock for this role that he's being ticketed for, but I do think he's the favorite for this role. And if he is able to secure this role, he has the potential to flirt with 8, 10, maybe even 12 touchdowns. This is a team that lives in the opponent's red zone, that plays with the lead frequently, and they're going to be using a back like this, I think.
Lastly, how about Breshad Perriman, the receiver from the Ravens? Seems like a lot of these receivers fall in the same kind of category.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Untapped potential, guys that we're talking about every year, and it just kind of hasn't happened for them yet. With that said, all these guys are really young. I made sure that everyone on the list was under the age of, were 27 or younger. And these guys that we're talking about in this section are all 24 or younger. Breshad Perriman, he's probably the one that I'm most skeptical about because he just wasn't good last year. I mean, he played a rotational role last year for the Ravens. He was Pro Football Focus's number 90 wide receiver out of 119 in terms of sheer grades. He was 107th out of 119 in catch rate at below 52%. Number Fire had Breshad Perriman at number 77 in their net expected points metric behind guys like Jermaine Kearse, who had an atrocious year in Seattle. Dorial Green-Beckham was about to get cut, and Victor Cruz, who did get cut. Joe Flacco's quarterback rating when targeting Breshad Perriman was 67.1. When Joe Flacco was targeting Mike Wallace, Joe Flacco's passer rating on those passes was almost 97, which is almost 30 points better than it was to Perriman. And to Steve Smith Sr., it was 92, which is about 25 better points than it was to Breshad Perriman. So Breshad Perryman was not good last year. I mean, that we have to be realistic about that. At the same time, I don't know that expectations were that high after he missed his entire rookie season with repeated PCL setbacks. The Ravens are now missing 214 targets from last year's roster. Mike Clay, one of the best projection guys in the business of ESPN now, has Breshad Perryman at 119 targets, which would have ranked 22nd in the NFL last season. And that's appealing, even though he kind of stunk last year. That's appealing because Breshad Perryman's ADP has been in the 50s on Fantasy Football Calculator and a wide receiver 48 in MFL 10s. So when you can get a guy who has big playability, who we think can finish top 25 in the NFL in targets around like wide receiver 50, you know, that is appealing from a value standpoint. Now, I've really tried to tread lightly with Breshad Perryman. He's not someone that I've been aggressively trying to draft, and that I think should continue for all of us, because the Ravens, I think, are going to end up signing one of these free agent receivers. I think that Eric Decker, if they sign Eric Decker, like, it would not surprise me if he stepped right in and led the team in receiving over Mike Wallace and Breshad Perryman.
Awesome. I absolutely love these series, love the breakdown. You're not saying it's definitely going to happen. You're just saying that these are definitely breakout candidates. Very, very cool. Almost as cool as next week's podcast, where you get to find out what Evan Silva is all about and what his daily process is to be the treasure trove of information that he is. And you have a chance to go against him in a high-stakes league, which we're going to break down the draft after it happens on an episode of the Fantasy Feast. Just hit up SaxUnderwear.com/Tucker or go to Omaha Steaks and put Ross in the search bar. Take advantage of one of those awesome deals that you should probably do anyway. And then forward me the email, ross@rostucker.com, and say, I want Evan in the high stakes league. Other than that, I am totally, totally stuffed. Love those of you that spread the word via social media and download us on multiple devices. But I think we're done here for today.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
So I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for a while now, and what's amazing about it is as soon as my wife said, honey, I need to get a new car, I said, TrueCar. Because they have the information on anything that's been sold in your area. Think about it. 3 million cars sold, over 13,000 dealers, over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available, average savings of over $3,000 off MSRP. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. And here's the key. TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the car you want. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Before we even started looking, she was looking at Explorers, Tahoes. I said, hey, look at TrueCar, and you can find out exactly what other people have paid in the area. It is awesome. TrueCar customers are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. Plus, TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.